To Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. As you'll see, I'm in a different location. Even if you're listening, it might sound a little bit different. And this is a very special episode. I'm delighted to be in Gießen, Germany, on a trip, ultimately on the way to Budapest to visit several Reformed brothers at a Reformed colloquium, which is put on by Westminster Seminary UK. But I've been able to come many days early to make a pit stop and visit a dear brother in Stuttgart, Dylan Halter, and now I find myself today. I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this, to come and visit Gießen, Germany, where I'm able to visit with several friends. Here we are in the Academy for Reformed Theology, the seminary in Gießen. I'll allow our guests today to pronounce the specific German name of the institution so I don't embarrass myself. I could do it. But I don't want to embarrass myself because this will be recorded and someone can use it.
It's the Akademie für Reformatorische Theologie.
I cannot do it that well, for sure. But we have with us Jochen Klautke. And apologies if I'm not getting that close enough.
Yes.
And Jochen serves here at the seminary. He teaches at the seminary. He's also a PhD student slash candidate at Apeldoorn studying Heinrich Bullinger. And he's also a minister in a relatively new, you've been a minister for a while, but you're a minister in a denomination that we want to speak about as mm-hmm. well, locally, colloquially known as the Bergbund, mm-hmm. Which is the, I will leave that to you too, but that would be the more of a confessional evangelisch reformierte Gemeinden, right? Bund mm-hmm. bekennenden evangelisch reformierte Gemeinden.
Oh, very good. So confederation of confessing evangelical reformed churches.
I should have written that down because you did adopt, I saw, an official English phrase. Well, thank you, Jochen, for welcoming me. It's been such a pleasure. We just had lunch with Boris as well. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure that you came and are staying with us.
Yes.
So I'm also looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. I'm so excited to be here and to hear about the work of the seminary and the church. And we've very briefly been able to get to know each other a little bit through, as I mentioned, this Reformed Colloquium in Budapest. And I know that that's a special event where you, as part of this seminary, get together with many other people. There's a lot of pastors and missionaries that are involved, but especially seminary leaders from a variety of European seminaries that come together and encourage one another and try to understand how to support one another. So I've been privileged for the last 2 years, and this will be my third time, to be able to come as well as just an attendee to the conference. But I get to, in the breaks, get to learn mm-hmm. about your work as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, please, if you would, maybe provide a very brief introduction to what's going on here at the Academy, mm-hmm. and then maybe we can eventually get into discussing the new church and your historic synod last year, and then mm-hmm. your second synod this year. But I'd love to hear about maybe your own life and your own ministry, but especially how the seminary came about here in Gießen.
Mm-hmm. Well, the seminary, so called the ART, Academy for Reformed Theology, is already around 25, 26 years old. So it started in 2000. And it came out of a movement where ministers, theologians that were part of the Lutheran and Reformed state church, Protestant state church, decided that it's not possible any longer to stay in there. And they started a movement called the Confessing Churches to plant churches outside of the established state church. And they pretty soon figured out, okay, we need a seminary to train future ministers for mm-hmm. that. And that's how ART was started 25, 26 years ago. And it grew slowly in the first years, but it pretty soon turned out that that whole movement that they hoped for, so thousands of people leaving the Protestant state church, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so what eventually happened is that the seminary more developed itself into a more confessional or reformed direction. Mm-hmm. And there were also a few years where not much went on here. So in 2021, so 5 years ago, there was kind of a restart. Mm-hmm. So, since then, the seminary is clearly confessionally reformed. It's working together with Puritan Reformed Seminary in Grand Rapids, where our students take some of the classes there online. Other classes are taught by us here in present, and we're very, very happy that we're having 18 students right now.
Yeah,
that we're allowed to teach, which is the highest number the seminary ever had.
Yeah,
so we're so thankful for that.
Praise the Lord.
About 8 of them are part of our small denomination, and 10 others come from other backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Some of them also from more Reformed Baptist backgrounds, but we have a very good fellowship as lecturers and students and within the student body.
Sure. There's so many dimensions to speak of, and some of our listeners might be aware of certain things relative to German culture and German history. Other people will be completely new to the subject. So it might be helpful to speak a bit about some of the dynamics, because my hope is not only that people would learn about the work here in Germany, but also might be better informed on how to pray and maybe how to support the work at the seminary and of the church. But just in general, I've got a little background from our conversations today already, but for the sake of the listeners, you mentioned the 18 students and the connection to Puritan. That's an important thing we could speak about on how that's helpful with accreditation and other things. But more significantly, I'd love to hear about the typical student. Mm-hmm. We plan to be speaking with some. We've got one helping out with a video that we'll talk with in a minute. And just to hear about what seminary life is like.
Yep.
But you have a couple people in Gießen, but typically you have the normal student, the typical student here is not what people might imagine for a college student, for example, a university student, or a seminary student in other institutions. What does it look like here normally?
As I mentioned, we have 18 students currently, but only 4 of them live here in Gießen. Mm-hmm. And the rest of them, they live all over Germany. We even have 2 students in Switzerland, so all over German-speaking Europe. Mm-hmm. And we did that on purpose to say, well, we want to be a seminary that where people can attend even if they are not able to move to Gießen. Mm-hmm. We're basically in the center of Germany. Gießen is pretty central, so it's for most of the students under 5 hours to get here. And of course, we can't make them come here every week. Mm-hmm. And that's why we decided to have several types of classes. So some of our classes are weekly over Zoom, like the languages, Greek and Hebrew. You need to be regularly teaching them, so that's Zoom classes, and then we have classes that Puritan Seminary teaches online, where we're just the teaching assistants here in Gießen and just correct all the papers and the exams, but the videos with the teaching is done by Puritan. And then there's in-house classes here, and that happens about 4 to maybe 5 times per semester, so roughly once a month. The students come here for 3 whole days. Mm-hmm. So we even have a room here with beds where the students can stay here in the seminary. And then we have 3 full days of teaching where German lecturers lecture in German. Mm-hmm. And this not only... it does not only have the goal to teach the students, but also to have real life encounters. Lecturer student and student student to really get to know each other, to discuss theological questions. Everyone that ever went to a seminary, I think, knows that a lot of the thinking process is not done in a class, but by discussing things with lecturers or other students. And we think that's a very important part of the theological studies. And so we're not just in an online campus where everyone does everything from his place. But we really want to want the students to regularly come to Gießen to really meet people.
I love hearing that, and I know that, you know, we share the same heart on that. I mean, in abstract, if you're just inventing a seminary, you would love everyone to be living on site, sure, studying together with the world's greatest theologians all in your own language, your Muttersprache, you know, but life happens, and we're not at that stage here. Maybe once upon a time, you know, German Reformed or conservative theology was that way 400 years ago, maybe. But it's just not that way now. But I appreciate your philosophy of ministry and your philosophy of education, because you're seeking to hold on to that ideal of student formation, of developing brotherhood, and encouraging one another in person, but also you being wise about taking steps toward that, rather than having nothing or just having a full online school. Mm-hmm. By partnering with Puritan, you're able to offer an accredited MA, if I'm not mistaken, through Puritan, through their video courses, but the students can do all their work and submit their exams and papers in Deutsch, in German, mm-hmm.
yeah.
and is graded by Germans, and then they have all the advantage, at least on a monthly basis, of getting together and meeting other students, building those friendships and relationships, and working those ideas out in person. So I think it's a wonderful setup, given the particular constraints here in Germany, that I think it's a really wise and effective way to do it. I'm very thankful to hear that the Lord is blessing that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Tell us a bit about, I don't want to get into a lecture or bore you, but mm-hmm. some of our listeners might not even be aware of how typical schooling education happens in Germany. Mm-hmm. And very early on, maybe as early as 16 years old, you're set on a course. Mm-hmm. And the society, the government, the schools basically put you on a track, and that doesn't make, it's not the final word maybe, but it's so different from America, because we think we can do anything we want. We're very creative, we're very enterprising or entrepreneurs, and you say, well, I'm just gonna quit my job and do this other thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that here.
No.
and you're gonna get on a track. That is foreign to many people, but at the same time, it makes it especially difficult for young men who might be called to the ministry. Mm-hmm. Because if you are going to be called to the ministry and switch tracks or get out of your program, mm-hmm. it's almost impossible to get back on. Mm-hmm. And so if you end up finding that seminary is not for you, or the Lord doesn't call you to ministry, you can't call it yourself to ministry, but maybe you go to seminary and the Lord doesn't call you. Mm-hmm. You can end up in this, what we would call a no man's land.
Yep.
Could you describe that, or maybe speak about that and just part of some of the challenges to this mm-hmm. here in this culture?
I think you're exactly right in describing mm-hmm. the situation. So that's also a reason why we have that part-time thing. So mm-hmm. many of our seminarians...
Exactly.
Some of them even work full time, have a family, and do all their classwork.
They've done all that, and they have something to fall back on. They have a trade or a professional job.
And if almost all of our students do have a trade or a bachelor's degree in mm-hmm. something else, and many of them work in their old jobs, maybe 50% or 30% mm-hmm. to provide for themselves or their families. So that's one of the ways. And then, of course, another challenge is that there is hardly any confessional Reformed churches in Germany. So we have some students that attend seminary here and they don't know where to go mm-hmm. after they're done, because we don't have a church that mm-hmm. might call them. And so they need to be church planters mm-hmm. and they need to be supported for that. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is challenging for our curriculum, to really focus also on church planting. I mean, if you're a seminary in a country with a lot of Reformed Presbyterian churches and there is a lot of vacancies, then it's there is some people who are especially gifted to be church planters. They go that way, but most people just graduate from seminary, are called by church, and work as a pastor in an established church. And our students, most of them, need to be church planters, and we need to focus on that in our program, to prepare them for that, and also to already think about where could we maybe plant a church, where could we maybe organize some funds to support him in the beginning, things like that.
Yeah. Certainly. Yeah, that's a very different situation from what's typical. It's not unheard of, but you're right. I mean, that would have been my next question, and I know that even some pastors are working as tent makers, we would call, like Paul did. He didn't have to, but he chose to, or he was working in his trade to support the ministry. We have I have a friend, Andreas Repp, down in Villingen-Schwenningen. Yeah. I might be getting the city wrong, but that's always a funny name of the city. But he's down there working as a consultant to the automotive industry, and also working as a pastor in a church is very difficult. It could be very stressful to not be fully devoted just to the ministry, but at the same time, it's a temporary necessity. But obviously, we would pray that the church would be able to support its ministers, but we're not there yet. Tell me on that note then, as we're speaking about church planting and the very few Reformed churches in Germany, there are a few different bodies. Some people may know Andreas, as I mentioned, just joined the EPQ Church, the Evangelical Presbyterian Church in England and Wales, but in Germany too. Are they going to be EPQ?
I know they talked about that to call themselves Evangelical Presbyterian Church in Europe or something. I don't know. But it's definitely not England and Wales anymore.
But I want to hear specifically about your denomination. This is an historic moment. Just in January 2025, you held your first synod, and you had another one a few months ago. And there's wonderful news I got to hear about at lunch. People can read about this online, and I'll try to include links to everything in the episode description. But please, would you describe to us this special moment?
Yeah. When I talked about the seminary, I mentioned that there was 25 years ago a movement of churches getting out of the Protestant state church, starting free churches, but wanted to stay in their Lutheran or Reformed confessional tradition. And that whole movement never really, there were maybe 5 to 6 churches coming out of that, but it never really, developed into a direction where we would say that it was a huge movement out of the state church or what they had thought it might become. But then there were actually 2 churches, the one that I pastor in Gießen now and another one more in the northwest of Germany in a city called Osnabrück, that our church actually started as a Reformed church, but the one in Osnabrück came out of the Lutheran state church, but developed more and more into a confessional Reformed direction. We worked together, and many of the other small churches that had come out of this movement, they either left to become totally independent, or they basically closed down because there were only a few people left. So at the end, there were those 2 churches, and both had clear Reformed convictions. And so 10 years ago, we started talking, shouldn't we work together more closely, become maybe a denomination? There were some Presbyterians around, but we were more of the continental tradition with the Heidelberg Catechism. So not for theological reasons, just for practical reasons, it was not possible.
Heidelberg's so close.
Yeah,
it was. The hometown confession.
So it was not an option to become part of a European Presbyterian denomination. And so we decided, okay, let's start talking about becoming a continental Reformed denomination here in Germany. And so for almost 10 years, we worked on drafting a church order. There was always a lot of work, but there was also, there's always the everyday work in a church. So it was always postponed But at the end, we finished that process in 2024, and both churches adopted that new church order, and we founded a denomination in January 2025. And in the meantime, we had started 2 church plants. So it was not only 2 established churches, but 2 church plants that were also present at our first synod or general assembly or however you want to call it. And yeah, that was a great reason to rejoice, to really make that cooperation binding. We've done youth camps together for years, so we both churches were very, very close to one another, but to now have an official denomination from Reformed Presbyterian convictions to not only exist as an isolated congregation, but to also have some accountability, that was a great great wish that we've had for years, and it was a great reason to rejoice when we could finally found that denomination. We're now two churches, two church plants, and we're right now in the process of starting two other churches.
Wonderful.
So that's great.
It is, and it's great to hear of it growing and to start to be established and spread. If you have other students who are part of, you said several are part, maybe 10 or so, I forget the specific number. So
around eight.
Eight students that are present. Ideally, they would go serve in some of these places or plant new churches. Yeah. What are the initial barriers to your graduates going out and planting new churches? There are probably several. Mm-hmm. Is it enough people? Is it a location? Is it finances? All of the above. If you were to say, do you have enough workers and not enough resources, or is it vice versa? How would you describe that?
I mean, if people ask me, what do you need to plant a church?
Yeah.
I say, of course, next to the grace of God and the Spirit, of course. The basic need is three things. You need someone who does it, a church planter. You need a cell group of people who are really committed. And you need the finances to pay the church planter, and then also to rent building I think currently we do have at the seminary some men who are very capable, and we hope to be able to send them out in a few years to plant new churches. And there's also a growing interest in Reformed theology, especially among evangelicals here in Germany. There's not That's many great. Of them, but there is a growing interest.
Sure.
So we've experienced growth in all of our churches and all of our church plants, and that's great.
People are coming from evangelical churches.
Yes, and that's a development that actually started with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, our churches were small. Osnabrück and our church in Gießen, 30 people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little bit bigger. Sometimes a little bit smaller. But now they grew within 5 years from 30 to almost 100 people, both churches and the church plans as well.
It's like an OPC mega church.
Yeah, but here in Germany, that's
no,
not
joking.
Bad.
That's a good-sized church, honestly. It's much larger than my church.
So we're very thankful for that. So I think the greatest challenge right now are finances, to be honest. Because even if a church has 70, 80, 90 members, then it's able to pay for their own pastor, but then that's it.
This also strange in Germany because of the way the state church is, that a lot of Germans are used to they get taxed.
Yeah.
I mean, we pay our taxes in the States for various things like Social Security, but in Germany, you can affiliate or declare either the Catholic state church or whatever state church, the evangelical version, which isn't, as you were explaining to me, doesn't mean what Americans think evangelical means. It's Protestant church. And that might depend on the state. There are 20 regional ones. And they tax you. And this might be, you might be a member, you might be involved, but it also might be you're paying your tax so you can have weddings and baptisms and funerals in a church. So historically, Germans are not used to tithing. They're not used to giving an offering beyond what gets taken out of their paycheck. Is that also
that's a
challenge?
Problem. Yeah, that's a problem. And the very high, currently more than 50% of what you earn is taken away from you for Social Security tax and so on. So we have a very high percentage of money that goes away. And that makes it Yeah. So you need to teach people what it means to be a free church, because I think it's under 1% of the population that belongs to a free church. So it's very uncommon. And then also to, because the tax rate and the social security rate, there's not much left.
Yeah, beyond that.
That's a challenge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then paying a pastor, because you have so much social security to pay, is then also a even big amount. Even if your pastor just gets a little bit, you need to invest a lot more. So that's all challenges. Yeah.
How do you handle things with the students? Can you describe also on the point of finances, how the seminary is funded? Mm-hmm. And as much detail as you want, but I'm thinking in broad strokes generally, how the seminary is funded and how students are able to come here and to become a student.
Well, the seminary is funded, some funds come from Germany or Europe, mm-hmm. but most of them from the United States. Mm-hmm. So we have especially two congregations in West Michigan that are very generous in supporting the seminary. Mm-hmm. But we also try to keep costs as low as possible.
Sure.
So we have under two full-time mm-hmm. positions divided up. Mm-hmm. And we really try to, keep the cost low.
This reminds me of Reform Forum because, it's we have about the same size office and it's mostly two full-time people. I mean, and you got other people, but it's a... I like it. It's a lean team, you know, doing really good work. You're trying to a lot of leverage. So you do a lot more than what people might expect for the size of the team, but I love it. And it feels like a brotherhood here.
So that's one
how
thing.
It happens. But do students pay tuition? Is it fully funded for the student, or is it
they pay a nominal? Very, very few tuition. Yeah. So that's also a European thing that usually going to college is free. Mm. So like private seminaries like ours, they charge people something, but it's not. We couldn't survive if we would charge tuition like seminaries in the United States, but because there's not a culture of being used to pay for education. That's the one thing. And then students, many of them work either part-time or full-time. That's the one way. Yeah. And then what we really have is that some of our students are working part-time for the churches where they're members of. So we have the church in Osnabrück that I mentioned in our denomination, and they have two of our seminarians live there, part of the church there, and then they work for the church with 25-30%, do several things, regularly lead worship, things like that. And the good thing for them is they have an income, and they assist the minister there, and they get experience for their future church planting or pastor's work.
Well, I want to ask you also, maybe changing topics slightly, but still generally on point. At lunch we were speaking also with Boris, your colleague, and hearing about the need, we were talking largely about the need for Germans, to be ultimately, you want indigenous churches with indigenous pastors serving the people of this area. That's the ideal. And that's very much in line with what the OPC likes to do with foreign missions. We don't like colonizing other places. If we're sending a missionary, we want to raise up an indigenous church that eventually doesn't need us anymore. You want your foreign missionaries to be out of business, ultimately, and to go on to other things. But there's not only a need for German-speaking German pastors, but also German literature. And and this might be, people just might not think about this because this is the home of the Reformation. At the same time, we lost it, for many years. And so the church here, the Reformed Confessing Church, is in a completely different life stage than what people might think in their mind. The people that know Reformed history, they might just view this as, the gold standard of Reformed theology. Most Germans, many, can speak excellent English, and which makes it easier for the Americans to be lazy when you visit. So I can get around here just fine. I feel stupid, but I get around here just fine. But the problem is, it's still not the same. You would ideally want good theology in Deutsch. But more than that, even more than just translating what Americans or Canadians or whomever wrote in English to Deutsch, it would be excellent to have your own pastors writing theology, developing theology. So to have continue developing not only a church and a culture of pastors who are well-educated, but also those that are pastor theologians and producing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes in the States, people talk about representation, and that often is viewed as sometimes like a woke thing or a political thing. I don't mean it that way, but it must, I would imagine it would mean more for a German evangelical to be reading some thoughtful theological pieces about Reformed theology from a journal or from someone from their hometown.
Yeah.
That seems to me like, this isn't even really a question, but more just a conversation point. That seems like it would also be a desire to train up students here who were able to be leading theologians someday.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, currently, I mean, you mentioned that we're right at the beginning,
yeah,
in a sense, so there's a need to plant churches and to work on growing those churches, mm-hmm, and that takes a lot of work. In a sense, it's easier, or it takes more time to plant a church,
yeah,
than
you
to pastor
to
establish church. So I think we're at a stage where really regularly writing or have our ministers write, yeah, things.
It's a luxury in many cases.
Yeah. So we're sometimes contributing like an article to a book or something, yeah, and we're publishing our own magazine four times a year called The Confessing Church, Bekennende Kirche.
Is that available in English? It's only in German?
No, it's only in German.
But we'll have to, maybe we can squeak by with an automated translation. It's probably terrible.
But
the automated
I mean,
at least understand what it's
in. I think they are pretty good okay by now, so.
We'll have to get a version of that. Are there other avenues, your own magazine, but are there other networks or outlets for Reformed thinking, even if it's broad, maybe not as confessional as we would like, but still some opportunities to communicate?
We're actually thankful that in the last 20 to 25 years, there were four or five publishing houses founded that go into a somewhat Reformed direction.
Good.
Yeah, it's mostly from a more Baptist point of view, but a very decent... very decent publishing houses that publish like literature from R.C. Sproul, John Piper, that kind of literature. But as a matter of fact, more than 90 to 95% of what they publish is written by English-speaking authors. They would republish some of the Puritans. It would some contemporary American pastors from the wider Reformed world, but yeah, there's very few books that are published by Germans. I mean, we're currently working on just finishing with one of these publishers to publish Bavinck's Dogmatics in German.
Wow.
This is our project as a seminary right now. And we're very thankful for that project. But again, it's a Dutchman from more than 100 years ago, although his parents are Germans, Yeah, it's still, So the last confessional Reformed systematic theology that was written in German is 150 years old.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
We need to remedy that.
Yes.
But step by step, one thing, everything in its place and everything in its time, I suppose. There's probably some really clever German colloquialism for that idea. I don't know any of them. Well, there is one term I know, but alles hat ein Ende, nur die Wurst hat zwei.
Oh.
But before I lose you, because I know we're going to go and I'm going to end up talking to some other people, I would love to hear maybe very briefly about some of your work with Bullinger, or mm-hmm. if you might share some of your PhD studies, because okay. That'll whet people's appetite for the future. Mm-hmm. And whenever you finish, hopefully sooner than later, we'll have you back and we can talk about the dissertation.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm writing on Bullinger, the reformer of Zurich, the mm-hmm. successor to Zwingli, and his view on suffering and dying. Now, that's a very fascinating thing yeah. to deal with. I'm currently thinking about how did he, I mean, in his writings, for example, he describes every suffering, every type of suffering mm-hmm. as punishment. Mm. And it was an interesting question for me. Does he distinguish between mm. a non-Christians being punished right. in a vindicative way mm-hmm. and like Christians that are punished where it's more chastisement? Mm-hmm. And I found out it's interesting. He uses the word punishment for both, but then he differentiates mm. between those two types of punishment. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting thing that I found out, and also where he tries to, for example, Calvin is very straightforward in saying, okay, also the fall mm-hmm. Was part of God's providence. Mm-hmm. So God preordained the fall. Mm. Bullinger was so afraid of making God the author of sin.
Yeah.
That he only dared to say God foresaw the fall. That's yeah. that's a difference. So he sure. would well Calvin was very eager to maintain the sovereignty of God over everything. Bullinger did not deny that, but he would be more cautious in the way mm-hmm. he would put things, because he was so afraid of God looking like
yeah,
the author of
sin. Yes, exactly. Well, that makes sense.
That's a few interesting things that I'm working on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Does Bullinger talk much about the theology of death itself, or does he get into things like the intermediate state or the resurrection, the just and the unjust, any of those topics?
Yeah, it's not. I read something about it. It's yeah. not where I worked in detail, but I found out he was pretty critical of people that believed in things like soul sleep mm-hmm. and things like that.
Good.
And of course, one of his great opponent, of course, was always Catholicism, mm-hmm. and so he's very much against purgatory. Mm-hmm. That's his main focus when he mm-hmm. talks about what happens after we die.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I look forward to learning more on Heinrich Bullinger from you in the future. Jochen, it's very much a pleasure of mine to be here and to speak with you. I'm looking forward to the next couple of days in Hungary. And I just want to encourage everyone to find out more about the seminary. Is there a specific place? I mean, I could send people to the website for the seminary, for the churches. Is there any other way people might get in touch or follow up if they'd like to learn more?
Yeah, I think the seminary would be a good place. Yeah. Website, it's in German, yeah. obviously. Yeah, they could just write an email if they have questions, and we're always happy to answer those. And also, if you're around here in Germany, yeah. feel free to visit us. Yeah.
I can testify. You know, I mean, if in the Chicago area, it's really easy to get to Frankfurt or Munich, especially if you're on United. But the train here, not difficult. It might
just
be late.
40 minutes from Frankfurt.
It might be late, but it's not hard to get on the train and to get here. So only 40 minutes is nothing. So that's wonderful. Well, it's a pleasure to be here in Gießen. Thank you, Jochen. I'm looking forward to speaking with others on this episode.
Thank you.
So everybody watching, listening, we'll have some more conversations lined up, but it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're back with another conversation with another dear brother. I'm happy now to be sitting down with Lukas Strauss. Not great, but I'm getting
good,
there. Close
good.
Enough
pretty
for America. Lukas is both a student and an employee here at the seminary. We would love to talk about both your experience as a student and your experience in the things that you're working on. So welcome, Lukas. Thanks for having me. Thanks for taking the time to sit down.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'd love to hear about just your testimony. How did you come to faith? I mean, how did you grow up? I eventually want to find out how you came here as a student studying for gospel ministry. But can you lead us here? What's your history like?
So I did grow up in a Christian home. Mm. My parents both are Christians, and they go to an evangelical free church where I grew up as well. So I came in touch with the faith pretty early on. And so I grew up in the church, visited the Sunday services and youth groups and these kind of things. And so it happened around 14, 15, 16. I can't like put the finger on the date, but around these years, I started to understand more and more. And I realized that I do believe what the gospel says. I do believe what the Bible says. And so I would say I'm a Christian. Like, I never doubted what the Bible said, but this was the time when I really became Christian in a sense that I really understood more and lived accordingly. And so during the high school time, at the end of the high school, last year of the high school, I started to think about ministry. First of all, it started as a why not ministry, and then I prayed about it, talked about it to many people, and I decided to study theology to become a minister during that time. And during that time, I also became Reformed, because I didn't grow up Reformed. I grew up in a more Lutheran, pietistic environment. And I didn't know that there was anything like a Reformed church, because the Reformed community in Germany is just so small. I never heard of it. But then I listened to Ligonier Ministries, actually. R.C. Sproul and John Gerstner.
And, how did you find that?
I had a friend who liked John MacArthur. And he said, like, just listen to his sermons. They're pretty good. And then so I tuned in to John MacArthur for a while. And then I heard something about Ligonier, R.C. Sproul, and I googled them, and I saw, oh, they have like this app where they put all these teaching series on. And then I downloaded the app, listened to these series. And it was the first time I was really challenged to think about some of the theology and about things like predestination, the covenants, baptizing babies was kind of like new for me, because
even growing up in a Lutheran pietistic
it's like the Lutheran pietistics, they are kind of an interesting art of churches because they are Lutheran in the sense that they belong to a state church pretty long, but they moved away from that 60 years ago, and so they become more and more baptistic these days. So it's now like the churches nowadays would probably be more what you Americans would understand as a Baptistic, Southern Baptist kind of church. But their origin is actually Lutheran. So it's kind of confusing. They are kind of Lutheran, but they're not really Lutheran. And so I wasn't baptized as a baby. I was baptized when I was a teenager. And I thought only people in these state churches, the liberal ones, they baptize their babies because they don't understand it rightly. And so I thought about these kind of things the first time when I listened to R.C. Sproul and John Gerstner. But I had no connection to a Reformed person here in Germany. And so I looked for seminaries I could attend. And I did find an evangelical seminary, which I thought was probably the best option, and I went there to study there for my bachelor degree in theology. And it's actually here in Gießen as well. And when I came to Gießen, to the city of Gießen, to study there at the seminary, I looked for a Reformed church. And this Reformed church is the Berg Church, where Jochen is the pastor. And so he was actually the first person I talked to who is also Reformed. I've never met a Reformed person before. And this was some like 4 years ago.
And how did you find that church? Through word of mouth? Did you find it online?
I just found it online. I just Googled Reformed church. And through the church, I found the ART as well. And then at some point, I switched to the ART.
Well, this is fascinating to me for many reasons. I want to ask you some more questions and talk more about this. But given the nature of your work here at the seminary, I think it's also on point. People might be interested. Last year, I visited my dear friend Kurt Federle in Basel, Switzerland, and speaking with him, and also with another brother, Florian Weick, in Zurich. It's really important how you do your website, and it's important the words you use and how you do marketing, for lack of a better term, to market your church, because people might want to find you. But in Switzerland, you would never use the word Reformed for what you and I would hold to and believe, because that's the state church there.
Yeah.
And the Reformed church there is the one that's liberal. If it's not Catholic, it's Reformed, and the Reformed church there is very liberal. And there they tend to use Presbyterian. I don't know the Deutsch, the Swiss-Deutsch Presbyterianisch or something like that. And that would be more of a code word, but that, I don't know, is common. That's strange as it is. Mm-hmm. But here in Germany, what were some of the words? Reformed is the word that you were using to search. Do even people even know what they're looking for if they're looking for something like that?
I think I searched for Reformed because I knew what I wanted to find.
Yeah. Because of the Ligonier connection.
Because of the Ligonier connection, I knew what Reformed means. But I think most Christians wouldn't know what Reformed would be.
Of course.
They would have a idea about what it means to be a Calvinist, maybe.
Okay.
But probably the idea would not be really accurate. It would probably be more like what other people say about Calvinists, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have like the name Evangelisch in it, but with the combination Reformiert, which shows that we are Protestant.
So the Evangelisch sounds like evangelical, but that's a different connotation in America, right? So Evangelisch here, for lack, I don't know, but it's more similar to just the general term Protestant.
Yes. Yeah. We have Evangelisch for Protestant and Evangelikal for evangelical.
Yeah, and those are very different things.
And they are different things because the Protestant name would mostly be used for the state church, but they would be only the Protestant church.
They wouldn't be confessional.
They wouldn't be confessional. They wouldn't be put in Reformed. So you would see, okay, this is something else than a state church, but it's also not something like just an independent free church. Mm-hmm. So it would catch your attention, I think. So this is kind of how like we try to label that. Even though we have to say that the most people wouldn't know what Reformed mean.
So how long were you worshiping at the church here in Gießen, where Jochen's the pastor, before you became a student?
Around 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I finished my bachelor's at the other...
Were you worshiping here while you were doing your bachelor's degree?
Yes, like the seminary is not too far away from here. It's just a couple of minutes. So it was like close to the church. And then I chose the church to go there because it was Reformed, it was confessional, and I know it would fit my beliefs pretty good. And then I was thinking about doing a master's degree, and that's when I came to the ART, because then there was the opportunity to take the courses here, and this was about like a little bit more than a half year ago. So not too long ago.
Did you start working here right away, or is that something that came later?
Yes, like during my bachelor degree, I started to work in the church. I did Bible studies on Friday nights every now and then. I did preach once or twice in these years. And so I had like good contact to Jochen and Boris, and we worked together in the church on some projects. Even I did the podcast in that time. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
I'd love to.
Yeah, for sure. And this wasn't a point when they asked me if I want to work here as well when I study here. And so I started when I started to study.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So right away.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful to hear what you're doing, and thank you already for the help. Lucas has been helping with the AV, and they have this wonderful room set up for podcasting. So this makes it easy for me to travel, and cameras, tripods, lights, all this stuff I don't have to bring, which is great. But I would love to learn more about your podcast, the seminary's podcast, but also I think people would be fascinated to hear just about social media, and there's this whole other world. You're using a lot of the same tools that we use, Instagram, using the Reels, YouTube, etc. But in the German language, it's almost like a different world. So I'd love to hear you just talk about that in general, and to help us get a better understanding of the Reformed confessional world, but in the German speaking part of it.
Yeah, especially on social media, there is not a lot of stuff going on in the Reformed bubble in Germany, because there is
nobody.
Yeah, like it's just us. There are a couple churches other than our denomination, but they don't do a lot of social media or online stuff. So we are pretty isolated.
Right.
And so we try to just be more professional week by week, be steady and work hard for every episode. But we also try to reach more people with the Reformed faith, with something most people in Germany don't know and probably never heard of. So we try to do some podcasts on really basic things. We did something on baptism last year.
Precisely.
We just did four podcasts on baptism. We did five podcasts. I just recorded this morning the last two episodes for something on the 5 points on Calvinism, just to speak about these things. And we'll probably add another one, a sixth one. To
6 point Calvinist.
Yeah, like not a 6 point, but a sixth episode in which we would talk about the arguments pro and con, just to why are the Christians not believing this doctrine? Because most of our listeners who would be new would probably not hold to the doctrine, and so we try to explain these kind of things so that they get what we mean.
Yeah, and then anticipate their objections.
Yeah. Yes, anticipate the objections. Yeah. And so yeah, we do the podcast, we do the reels on social media.
Yeah, tell me about that, because that's the kind of thing. YouTube. This is a little bit, there's an American term, we'll say this is a little bit inside baseball. So you and I do this.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about things we're familiar with. Maybe not all the listeners care or listen, but I think it'll be interesting to them, because there's a certain science and strategy, and I don't like to try to overthink it. I like to try to do something I think is helpful and beneficial. Mm-hmm. But there is a science and a strategy to trying to develop social media that might be found by somebody that you want to find it.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about very specific things using very specific terms that no one would know except you and me, that's probably not going to be found. And there's a place for that, for the insiders. But like your series on baptism, or if you're making reels and you want to communicate some Reformed theological ideas to people that don't even know about Reformed theology, I imagine you're thinking about titles or questions. Yeah. How do you strategize trying to make yourself accessible, or I guess in the business we'd call this, you know, search engine optimization or stuff like that. Like, how do you think about that? Trying to communicate or get people intrigued or interested in learning more about Reformed theology?
Yeah, I think I don't try to overthink it, but I try to, like, we try to be good on the technique side, to have like the quality as high as possible, as high as, or like as good as we can do it. Of course, we have some limitations, but within these limitations, we try to do our best. We have, like, we try to do good thumbnails. We have a guy from our church who's pretty good at that, who's designing that, who's managing all the uploading.
So do you take pictures of Jochen and Boris, like, making funny faces?
Yeah, like at the end of each podcast, we just take a couple pictures where you just sit in the chairs and look to the camera so that we can make a thumbnail out of these. Yeah. And then we put the title on the thumbnail, and we choose a title we know people would interest.
Right.
It's kind of like just doing a sermon. You want to think how you listen to things, and then you want to think, okay, what could he ask? What could be interesting, so that you don't just go with limited atonement for the first point of the 5 points, right?
Right. Build up to it.
But that you modify it a little bit so that it sounds interesting.
Sure.
And then we upload the episode on YouTube and on all the podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. And then I go through the video and look for good points where to cut a reel. I try to find a point where one of the speakers makes his point clear enough that it's not misleading, so that it's not just...
it can stand on its own.
Yes, it can stand on its own, not completely taken out of context. But it has to be short as well and interesting as well. So it's kind of hard. I normally find like two or three of them in a video, and then we cut the reels and we upload them to promote the episode.
Yeah.
And we always put a link there so that if you click there, you'll land at, to watch the episode. Yeah. Because we don't want the people to only watch the reels, right? We want them to watch both the reel and then go over to the real podcast, because this is where the full argument is displayed.
Yes. Yeah. This is good content marketing. This is the way you do it. This is really wonderful. So, I mean, what would be some bad examples? I'm wondering if we could really get some Germans interested if you started to question like the German beer purity law. If you said Arminians add other things to their beer, that would get people upset and the click. You want to get them to click? No, these are bad ideas. But I'm sure there's all sorts of ways to get Germans interested to learn more about good things, not just bad things. Lucas, tell me about the podcast too. Not just the social media, but the longer form. I'd love to hear about some of the topics you've discussed and some other things that you're looking to record in the future.
Yeah. We always have one of our pastors here for podcast, or someone from our church. I had like an elder from our church here once, and we talked about some topics. I had also other ministers from other churches. We have like this format, like life in ministry with, and then we invite a guy who talks about his church, what he's doing, kind of like what we do at at the moment. But I'm normally the guy asking the questions.
Yeah, that's good.
And so
Would you say the Der Fragemeister? How do you say? Is that their word? I don't know.
No, I think we don't have a German word for that. So it's probably a podcast host in Germany as well. And then we just talk about topics interesting for people in a church. I mentioned baptism, five points of Calvinism. We had something about like AI and these kind of things. We did I think four episodes on these topics. Then we have every now and then we have just an episode standing on its own. We did have something about Lutheran and Reformed people in contrast, because most people in Germany are, they know Luther, but they have no idea what Reformed is. And so they might wonder where the differences are. We had something about law and gospel, just like these normal things people would hear in a English podcast as well. But most people in Germany probably wouldn't listen to an English podcast just because it's hard for them to listen to English. As a theologian, you're kind of used to the English language because you have to. But the average German is not so much into English. And so it's an obstacle for them to go to Reformed Forum or to Ligonier to listen to these kind of things.
Right. It's all the more reason, because the assumption might be that, well, we produce lots of free courses. We have, I think, 38 video courses now that are available for free. And we try our best to get all of them translated into Spanish and Chinese to start, because they're huge
communities.
Huge communities, and most of those people, very few of them would know English. The percentage of German speakers that know English is much higher than Chinese speakers, for example, or Spanish speakers even. Nevertheless, it's still much preferred to be listening or watching or reading in German for Germans, right? So there's still a great desire and a great need there. Lucas, I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit, if let's pretend and hope, we'll pray, that somebody might be watching this that lives in Germany. Maybe they come from an evangelical church, maybe they come from a Lutheran church, or maybe they just, I don't know, came from somewhere else. But they're getting more interested in Reformed theology for whatever reason. Maybe they were like you and were introduced through Ligonier or some other ministry. What would you want them to know? If you're speaking to a future student or a future church member, what would be helpful to them that you wish you would have had 4, 5, 6 years ago?
I think what would be helpful is to be really connected to a Reformed church or Reformed friends, Reformed people, maybe a Reformed mentor who can mentor a young person. So I benefited from the church here in Gießen and the connection to Jochen, especially, where I learned so much these last 3.5 years. And yeah, I can't really compare life before being in a Reformed church with being in a Reformed church, because yes, you know the doctrines and you know the theology through the internet. But it's something else living in a Reformed church, attending a Reformed service every week, than being just isolated by everyone. So it helped me to grow in my faith and grow in theology and all these kind of things. So I would say this is the key to look for a Reformed church. Like in Germany, it's pretty usual that people move to Reformed churches because there are so few. So
they'll move their home.
They'll move their home to attend a Reformed church. And I think it's worth it.
Yeah. How would people find out more? Maybe can you share some links or let them know?
Sure.
We'd love to include things in the episode description, but just in terms of some easy ways people might follow up with ART or with the Bergbund.
I mean, we have email addresses on our homepages for the ART, for the Berg. I think they're also translatable to English if there's someone interested who doesn't know the German language. We have Instagram accounts as well for the magazine / podcast and also for the ART. If you text these accounts, you'll end up at the right place as well.
Or somebody will see it.
Someone will see it too, who can forward it to one of us.
That's great.
This works well. Yes, these are probably the best ways to find us, or just visit us for a Sunday service at one of our churches. We have in some places in Germany, we have the churches in northern and southern Germany, in the middle of Germany, so...
That's great. It's great to see the church growing. It's wonderful to speak with you. What are your plans and your hopes for the future? I know it's in the Lord's hands.
Yeah.
But is your desire to plant a church or to minister in a church when you graduate?
Yeah, like minister in a church. I could also imagine doing a PhD. I really like to study theology and go really deep into things. I really enjoy that, doing that here for the papers and the things I need to do for seminary. So if I could deepen that would be great. But we'll see what the Lord has in store.
Very good. Well, thank you, Lucas, for speaking with me. I really appreciate it. Well, I'm back here at ART, the Academy for Reformed Theology here in Gießen, Germany, and continuing our podcast conversations with several folks. We've already spoken with Jochen, and we've spoken with Lucas. Now we have another guest. I'm very happy to speak with Philip Paul. And Philip here is a candidate to become an elder in one of the Bergbund churches, and also has an interesting work history, trained as an attorney, and also was born and raised, at least to the age of 9, in the United States. Well, welcome, Philip. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Glad to discuss things with you.
I know this is a bit of a whirlwind, but I'm happy to speak with you. It's been a busy day. I don't, you know, keep matters as private as you want, but I know you had a job interview and some exciting things going on in the city.
That's right.
So then you come up here to Gießen and have the opportunity now. We have the opportunity to talk to you not only about work life, but we can get a better idea of what Reformed church life is from another perspective. We've heard Jochen's perspective. Jochen, obviously serving as a professor here and a leader of sorts at the seminary, also a pastor at the church. We've spoken with Lucas, who's a student but also an employee of the seminary. But you're giving us another dimension to talk more about the officer life, but also just the general life in the church. But I'd love, before we get to that, I'd just love to hear about your time in Greenville. People that watch this know I spent lots of time in Greenville and have dear friends there. But you were telling me earlier your mother is American. Your parents met at Bob Jones.
That's right.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, so my dad is from Germany, from an area about a little over an hour north of here. And He finished his school in Germany. Back then, he could finish school after the 11th grade in Germany, and he was wondering what he should do with that extra year, basically, before starting his professional training or college or whatever the next step was. Mm-hmm. And Bob Jones had different mission teams that would come to Germany, and they would sing, or they would have courses for the students to learn German.
Really?
In Germany. Yep. And so he was kind of involved with that, and kind of came down to, he would like to go to Bob Jones for a semester just to be in the States. And he happened to just be there at the right time. Lord led it all that he was there where my mom was, and she had... she needed to work for her tuition, so she ended up being in summer school. So my dad came a little late in the semester because his paperwork didn't go through early enough. So he was there for like half a semester and then for summer school. And my mom happened to be there that year too. And they hit it off in that semester. And stayed in contact, got married in 95. And then I was born in 1996. And we went to Hampton Park Baptist Church.
Yeah.
In Greenville, and that's where I grew up. And when I was 9, then we moved back to Germany for my dad's job, and that's how I ended up back here in Germany.
That's great. Did you move back to where your father came from, or did you?
No, we moved to where his brother and his parents were living at that time. Mm. His brother still lives there, but my dad actually is now come back to where he grew up. Actually, they moved back there.
Wow. Yeah. What was it like for you as a 9-year-old to move? I mean, what was your your father speaking German to you in the home?
Or no.
So what was that like?
Oh, that was a really tough time. Yeah. Those fears were really tough. For one, it was, of course, just the language coming over here, and it was, learn German, speak or die, basically. Mm-hmm. And other kids didn't know German at that age. Didn't know English at that age. I didn't know German, so that was kind of tough at school.
It's hard enough to make friends, and then you're
that's right. That's right. And then I went to a Christian school in the States, and there's not very many Christian schools in Germany at all, and there wasn't one where we were. So going to public school then, that was another difficult thing. And then fourth grade is also a very important year in the German schooling system, where you kind of move from elementary school to the next school form in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a pretty important year academically, which was kind of tough for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lord helped to go through that phase. And I think I felt pretty comfortable with everything maybe around 9th or 10th grade probably.
Mm-hmm.
Took a while, but then I started to feel like I could achieve what my potential was in school, and felt pretty happy that I wanted
to. You felt like you weren't, climbing uphill anymore.
That's right. I felt like I kind of belonged, and I realized visiting the States, and must have been around 11th grade. I felt I'm pretty German now.
Yeah.
I could tell about that.
That's great.
So that's why I decided to stay here then, and met my wife, and I have 3 kids now here. So
that's wonderful.
We're here.
Wonderful.
For the long term.
Well, praise the Lord. I want to eventually talk about how you became connected with the Reformed Church here.
Yeah.
And this new denomination we've been speaking about, relatively new. I mean, at least it was formalized. The church has been around, but the specific denomination was formed in January 2025, formally. But before that, I'd love continue speaking about your education, because some people might be interested. You're trained as an attorney. You're even looking to serve as a clerk. I'd love to hear about how you got into... What's that look like in the German system? Is it the kind of thing where it's part of the tracks, where at some point in time in high school you kind of get pointed in a direction? Is it, how specific is that? But I'd love to find out how you end up in law school.
Well, I ended up in law school.
Do they even call it that here? What is it?
I know in the American system you have you get your bachelor's degree 4 years and you have 3 years law school. In Germany, you basically start directly into university with studying law specifically. You don't get the bachelor's and something else, and then go to law school. So, that's what I just finished with. It ends with a state exam, so it's central for each state has its own exam, but they're all very similar, so that you can practice law in all of Germany then. at the end of the system.
It's even more specialized in the States than I guess.
That's right.
A specific bar.
That's right.
And
that's right.
You can't really just go cross border.
That's right. That's right. But Germany is only about the size of one of the states. Anyway, so.
Does the Bavarian king have his own rules?
I'm sure he wishes he does. He did. But but they do kind of feel like their system is special, and of course their exam is especially difficult, and it's harder than everybody else's. But,
yeah,
but they'll allow other people to come and practice because they have to.
Great.
So I ended up there. I actually in school I had decided I didn't really want to go into law school. I felt like I wanted to do something more with biology, molecular biology.
Really?
That's what I actually started with.
Yeah.
I did that one semester and realized it wasn't actually for me. Mm-hmm. So I got out of that and I was kind of more like, oh man, I got to do something really simple and find something easy. And but I had people in my life that were like, no, you should do something a little more.
How specific are they when they're directing students? Is it more just toward a university track and a trade track, or does it get more narrow than that? We've talked a little bit about Jochen about the nature of some of that, because as you would be aware, this is so foreign. Americans don't have that sense. We can do whatever we want whenever we want. We just, you know, I'm going to do this now.
That's right.
And unless you don't get admitted, anything's available to you. That's until they tell you the door's closed. But here they're guiding you along the way. And if you get off the track to pursue ministry, for example, you basically can't go back.
You need to make sure you get your paper.
Yeah.
Your paper that says you are allowed to do this or that. So,
but you were given
guidance
that could do anything from molecular biology even to law. So just basically.
So I'd say the high school education is very broad, very broad, and like, because I know like in the States you can, you know, elect what kind of math you want to do.
Sure.
Calculus. In Germany, you have to learn it all for your high school diploma. There are three different school forms, and the one that will give you the basically the allowance to go to college.
Yeah.
You learn very broadly, and then you can visit any university in Germany.
Mm.
That's why we don't really have anything like the ACT or the
standardized testing.
That's right.
Because the high school system is already baked into
standardized.
It.
That's right.
They just go by your grades.
And it's already very liberal arts wise, so it's not very specialized. So that's why then you basically go right into whatever subject you want to study from the beginning then. So that's the track I was on, was to go to university. That's on paper how it's supposed to be. But in reality, about 50-60% of the students now go to the school form that's supposed to prepare you for university.
That many. But then they don't end up doing that.
No, or they go to university and they're not actually cut out for university. Yeah, so I'd say that's a problem we have in Germany right now. We're getting standards lower and lower and lower. Yeah. And,
but we have the problem where we just fund all the education through loans that you can never default on, and price just keeps getting higher because the government's paying the bill.
That's right.
For the time.
Yeah.
And they have no incentive to provide a better quality product at a lower price.
Right, right. And they're offering
someone with these degrees that are useless.
That's right. They're offering more and more specialized weird degrees and offering everything side of learning your subject. So you have the sports teams and the cafeterias and whatnot, the big campuses where you sleep and stuff. This is a huge part, but then the actual subject then is not so focused. So in Germany, you don't take your own loan though. So, but basically the state.
But there's no sports teams at the university.
No, but the state pays for you. So everybody's made to pay for your college education basically. But it's less, of course. Yeah.
Sure. I suppose. So you end up studying the law.
That's how I ended up.
Was it a specialized? Is it a general law education, or then? Are there some specialized years, or do you get that perhaps through the clerking?
It's basically a very broad education. Mm-hmm. You have different areas. In general, you have like public law, private law, and criminal law. Those are the three big areas that we study. And then I did have a specialization during university, which was in criminal law, but that's more to make sure that you show that you can work in a, I say, the scientific way, mm-hmm. and you can produce a good product mm-hmm. by research and stuff, mm-hmm. just showing legal research. So it's nothing that specializes you so much to say I'm going to be this or that later. Mm-hmm. The whole system is geared toward producing judges, though. Mm. Even though most people won't actually be a judge later, but the whole system is towards that. I'd say it has to do with differences in the process of how we get to get through to what's the decision? The decision at the end of a court case. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How we get to verdicts in the States mm-hmm. with the jury system and mm-hmm. The judge who's basically just making sure everybody plays by the rules. And in Germany, mm-hmm. it's actually the judge who decides, gives you the decision. So the
rule. You got that option, but it's not always that way here. But yeah, you can mm-hmm. go with the judge. Sometimes it's better.
right. So in Germany, we don't have really a jury system at all. Yeah. It's always the judge. So the whole system is geared toward making judges, even though most people end up being an attorney.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. So that's why I have it's a general law degree now, and then you have two years of clerkship, where you look at all the different areas of law. You're a few mm-hmm. months with a judge, with the district attorney's office, with a federal agency, and then with an attorney for mm-hmm. about a year, and then you take your bar exam. It's your second state exam, it's called. Okay. It's comparable to the bar exam. After that,
then you can be fully
then you can do whatever.
Do what you need to do.
Right.
Wow, that's fascinating. What about your church life and all these mm-hmm. steps? I imagine you're moving in different cities, you're living in different places, having to find different churches, and maybe, I don't mm-hmm. know, but I'm curious, I suspect maybe your theological views are developing and growing over as you get right. older too. Absolutely. What has that path been like for you?
Yeah, so I grew up in the States, Baptist, mm-hmm. going to the Baptist church in Greenville. And my dad's background and my grandfather's background in Germany and stuff is with the Brethren Church mm-hmm. in Germany. So dispensational all the way through. But I'd say at my house we grew up very close to John MacArthur's theology. Mm-hmm. So Calvinistic and soteriology, but otherwise dispensational theology. Mm-hmm. And so that for me, that was the only...
Yeah.
Only game in town.
Basically. This is the way.
This is what the Bible just teaches, and it all comes out of the text. And of course, you grow up. We have I don't know if you've seen this, but you have like these long tracts that explain to you the different dispensations and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. but growing up, you're like, well, this all just magically arises out of the text. Obviously,
yeah.
It's just when you grow up with that, you think this all just uh-huh. Makes sense. And so that's how I grew up. Listen a lot to John MacArthur. My paper out and stuff like that. Our church where we were was it was a Baptist church, but probably too much to explain, but we weren't so close to where it was, and there were some difficult times there, so I ended up being there for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But my spiritual diet came a lot from John MacArthur and from our family at home and
while you were on a paper route?
I listened a lot to John MacArthur on a paper route, doing chores at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
Got that in your ear, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
That's great.
Yeah. Huh. That was cool.
So how did you come to find the brothers here in Gießen? How did you come to find, Reformed theology? Because we realize how unusual that is in Germany.
Yeah, so I'd say for me, I pretty much figured out I was Reformed because I figured out, I'm a Calvinist.
Yeah.
I didn't know the terminology up until
I was like 18 or stuff. Well, that's probably what I was talking to Lucas about. Like, what do people even search for? He ended up learning about Ligonier, mm-hmm. he was saying.
That's right.
And people that are watching this will have heard that already. But
of course, yeah.
And you, through connection through John MacArthur's ministry, are getting an English version of that. But now, what do you... Do you search the internet? Do you just search for, you're looking for things in German, but even like Evangelisch and Evangelikal, and those are all different meanings, and it's got to be complicated.
Well, I mean, since I was from the States, I'm very closely connected to the kind of theology that came from there. And,
sure.
And our church, like where I grew up, wasn't really super strong on theology in general. And I always had an interest in theology, so I was always looking.
But I mean, in terms of finding German people that are doing this, that was difficult.
Yeah, that was difficult. But it's. I'd say I just got kind of used to, well, I'm the Calvinist guy, and mostly people aren't that. But so that was, for me, that was, for a long time, that was Reformed theology is being a Calvinist, and that's about it. And then I, you know, since John MacArthur's also Calvinistic, and I went to his Bible school for a year. That's in Germany. They have a branch of that.
Oh, okay.
The European Bible Training Center.
Oh.
So I went there, and so I met a lot of people, of course, that were...
What city is that in?
Oh, they have different ones. They have one in Berlin. They have one in West Germany, and one down in Switzerland. I went to the one in West Germany. Yeah. Parents drove me there every week and once a week, one weekend each month.
Wow.
Because I didn't have my license yet. I was 17.
So it's just like the Army Reserve, you know? That's how they pitch it, you know?
There you go.
One weekend, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's so good.
That's where I met people that were Calvinistic, dispensational, and that was kind of my that was kind of my group then.
Yes.
I moved to Heidelberg. If you've never been, you should go. It's very beautiful there.
Yes.
A great university city for law. Mm-hmm. And I went to a church there that was planted by a pastor from the States. So that was also very Baptistic. But during that time, I kind of developed for myself. I was like, okay, there is such a thing as Reformed theology that's not exactly what I believe. I just kind of got warnings from, you know, we had a book, I remember, in the library at that church from R.C. Sproul on pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the pastors saying, you know, but you need to be careful with R.C. Sproul because he's reformed. I was like...
Now you want to know more about this.
Yeah, and I'm like, and I was thinking, am I not reformed too? What do you mean? I don't know. I'm going to ask. I remember asking then, so what is dispensationalism anyway? And then the answer was, well, it's biblical.
Yeah, it's what the Bible teaches.
Right. It's like, okay, but what does it teach? And what's the alternative? I don't really know. So I remember that. And then I got a book from J.I. Packer. It's very short on what is Reformed theology. And so I kind of read up on that and started getting my bearings on, okay, what is this? I understand. So I'm Calvinist, but there's more to Reformed theology than just Calvinism.
Mm.
And I'd say theologically, my pathway was from Calvinism to looking into end times, because that's such a huge thing in dispensational theology, and realizing, man, all these things that I believe about the end times don't really match up, line up with the Bible. And my church that I was in before I moved here to the Reformed Church, we preached through Revelation, actually. They aren't dispensational, but the Calvinistic and like a Reformed Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I moved on then, where I got my eschatology sorted out, and realized, this whole thing with the church and Israel is not the way I thought it was. I remember we preached through Revelation. I helped with that and realized lots about, you know, what the church is and what Revelation is talking about, the present state of the church, and is providing perspective on the kind of battle that we're in now, and of course some at the end about what's coming in the future, but a lot about just empowering the church now to stay true to her spiritual mission that she has. And then I started going through basically the high points in the Bible that are very important, kind of biblical theology like. So I had to preach then in that sermon series, I got to preach through Genesis 15 and Genesis 17 about circumcision.
Yeah.
And that kind of threw me, because I was like, man, well, circumcision is applied to children, and it's a sign of something that they don't, you know, confess when they're that small, and there's absolutely no problem with that. Yeah. Then what's the implication for
Then
baptism,
Paul,
then.
And Paul makes a connection to Romans 4. Wow.
So remember when I preached that, I was like, I'm going to leave that part out about what I think it implies for baptism, maybe, and my thoughts on that. I'm just going to preach the circumcision.
Is there any church version of, like, discovery, like during a deposition or something?
I have
like
to tell people. No, absolutely. I was absolutely open with the people preaching through, and they knew that that was just one of the steps on the way. I had been just looking into. So I got married in 2019. 2020, my first son was born, and just thinking about what does it mean to bring my children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and what is his status, and thinking of, well, in my theology, he's kind of like, he's like a Gentile. He's, you know, he's just out there, and I have to wait and hope that he's going to, but I can't influence him. You know, he has to make his own free decision to follow Jesus. And so that's kind of what put a pebble in my head about something as simple as, how can I tell my child Jesus loves you? I don't know if he's elect or not. You know, could be a Calvinist. I don't know. Mm. Maybe he doesn't in that kind of way.
Right. Or just like you're mentioning, is there any difference between just a total heathen,
exactly,
or a pagan kid or a Muslim child,
right,
and a Christian child? And you see that obviously people know there's a difference, but even in Baptist churches where I've been involved, people will still dedicate their child have some sort of non-baptismal service, but it's effectively setting the child apart.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, exactly. Because you know that
I'm glad that I don't know any Baptist who is, in my view, consequential on that. So nobody actually treats their child as if they're Gentiles like everybody else on the street. You know, they teach them to pray. I learned to pray and to read the Bible, and I need to put this up. But so that was something that made me start thinking about, well, maybe there's a view that matches more with what I think the Bible, because the Bible clearly teaches, I think, you know, 1 Corinthians 7 about how children of believers are different, and there is kind of this, I guess they say, in between. They're not completely out like unbelievers, but of course they need to believe the promises for themselves, but they are in some way. They're in, so that's kind of where I was in my thinking. They're in the covenant, and that's kind of of course this took like, I don't know, 1.5-2 years of me thinking about this, pondering this, getting into, like, no, they are in the covenant. And so the last thing then, how we actually ended up here then, I'd say, was, I remember we were walking through, we were thinking, oh man, but what if we actually become convicted, my wife and I, about, you know, we really should baptize our children. What would we actually do, practically speaking? Because there aren't any Reformed churches here. We have to move to America. We had one, a Bible teacher who is actually Reformed. He is very closely connected to the ART, and he would come and visit our church once a month and preach, not on baptism, but on everything else. He would teach and preach, and he still goes there very regularly. We think, well, maybe we could have him baptize our children, even though we're in a Baptist church. We'd have to talk with our elders, and how would that work? So we're just thinking about, you know, what if we actually, and for practical reasons, then we kind of said, you know what, let's just put that to rest. Well, I basically took Hebrews 8 and said, well, here's still something I can hold on to. I'm like, maybe the new thing in the new covenant is that everybody actually professes faith themselves. Maybe there's a difference. So put a pin on that. And then I found out about the ART from my brother-in-law, who's still in the church where we used to go to.
Okay.
But he comes, he would come here for training, and so I heard about the ART, heard from the Bible teacher that came to our church. He comes here once in a while to teach as well at the ART. And so I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I found out later, like, there's actually a church connected to the ART, and it's a Reformed church. And I was very interested then. I can remember we were going through buying shoes for my son, and I'm looking at my phone like, hey, look, there's this Reformed church. And it's not that far. It's like 1:15. We could drive there on a Sunday morning and listen and meet people and just come back and see how it is.
Yeah.
That's what we did. That was in December 2023.
Wow.
I looked that up and was like, well, there's actually we should check that out. It's not that far. We could go. So finally got around to that in April 2024.
Mm-hmm.
We visited the Berg Church here in Gießen for the first time. And it was great.
I met Boris and Jochen.
There you go. It's providence. Yeah. Jochen wasn't there. He was in the States at the time.
Oh,
okay. We were there first time.
Yeah.
But we had been looking for a church that had the kind of liturgy as well. That was another thing, part of our theological, my wife's theological development, I'd say, where we think we really need like a a liturgy that puts God in the center and that calls us as a community to praise God and not such an individualistic view on corporate worship, but something that calls us together to meet with God and to listen to His Word, and we want to sing psalms. And so we were like, oh my God, they have psalm books here. We sing psalms in this church. Mm-hmm. That's great. And the whole liturgy, just the standing up together, praying the Lord's Prayer together, speaking the Apostles' Creed. They were just things that we had been looking for. And
yeah. You don't realize how much, I mean, we take that for granted often in our churches, but you don't realize how rare that type of thing might be.
Wow. Yeah, especially in Germany. We had already, in our old church, we were kind of talking about, we should move more in this direction maybe, and that would be great. But it's not, we really appreciated that church, and we still do. We're very friendly with them, but we just found out, wow, we could go to a church where actually everything is basically done the way that we already would like it to be done. I think we might fit here. So, and people were super friendly and invited us to stay over, and we talked it all through. And so we would come by maybe once a month to visit here for a few months. And then I think we moved here then in December 2024. So a few months later, we decided, my law school is distant learning, so I don't have to talk to my boss of my job back there. It's an hour there, but I can do mostly home office. Mm-hmm. So, there's nothing really in the way. Maybe let's just look and see if we can find a place. Mm. And we can move there, because that would be really great.
So you moved
really
here for being close to the church?
That's right. We did. We wanted to join the church and support the mission. And and I was like, well, what are we waiting for? This is great. It's great for us as parents, but for our children, we thought it would be fantastic, because there's also a lot of children at the church as well, and just have this shared view among the leadership and among the parents in the church of what church should look like. And I remember I wasn't so sure about the baptism question yet, but I was like, but we'll see how that turns out. So I came the month before we moved here, November 2024, and was in one of Jochen's classes on ecclesiology. And I'm going through, and I'm like, every time he's talking about a different thing, I was like, yeah, that's what I believe. It was, for me, it was very awakening, like, man, all these things that I believe about the church, about ecclesiology, there's actually like a team that I could join that already believes all this. I was thinking, I'm going to have to just the moment of realizing, there actually is a tradition that already believes all these different aspects of liturgy and what is the church, what's the mission of the church, and what's the presbytery, and what are the elders, and what's their job, and all of these different things. And then the last thing he talked about then was about the Lord's Supper and about baptism. And it was that moment where I realized, I'm already like 90% there. I already believe that the children are part of the covenant, but I was still holding on, like, well, maybe baptism is different than circumcision, and that maybe you only apply it to people who profess their faith. And so before we joined, I talked a lot with Jochen about that, and realized, no, it's the same, it basically signifying the same thing as circumcision in the Old Testament. And so we made the jump and joined the church then in February 2025, had our children baptized in that service as well. I've been here ever since, and support in whatever capacity we can.
That's great.
Yeah.
Tell me about, so you're a candidate now for being an elder, correct? Right. So tell me about that process. Has there been some officer training? Has the congregation nominated you? Tell me how that works in the new Bergbund.
Yeah. So the process is that either the elders, the presbyters, or the church can make suggestions when one of the terms is ending. So this year, we have at the moment we have three elders, and they're voted in for 4 years each, for a 4-year term, and they're not all voted at the same time. So you have
You stagger them,
right. So what somebody's the founding elder of our church is actually he'll be retiring this year, formally at least, from his from his eldership position. I'm very glad he'll still be there though, but he's been sick, and so he said it's time to step down. And And then it was actually Jochen and the elders that approached me and asked if I would be willing to serve as an elder. And yeah, also people from the church that have suggested me. So we have the vote next week.
That's great.
Next Sunday. And
well, praise the Lord. Yeah. Hopefully he'll keep leading you there and preparing you for that work. And
my training wise, you'd asked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to the EUTC. I've been in preaching ministry for I don't know, many years in my church before, and yeah, they have the program here as well that I'll be. I visit as many classes as I can.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's exciting.
I like that. Yeah, I do like that. I have one that I'm want to visit this year, and hope I can do some more on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any maybe words of encouragement? I'd love for people to know, especially in the United States or just English speaking countries that might be watching this. I'd love for them to know more how they could pray for the small but growing Reformed churches in Germany. But also, if you might have any words of encouragement for people who might be in your position. Maybe there's some people out there that are you know, living in Germany for whatever reason, they become aware of Reformed theology.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions or things that you wish you would have known back at your time? Maybe that might help people.
What I would, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is it's absolutely worth it to move for church. I think I know it's not always easy, and we, you know, for our situation, it matched up very nicely. So I don't want to make light of that, but I just don't think you can put a premium on how important it is for your own spiritual life, for the spiritual life of your family, to be in a church where you're not always, you know, kind of swimming against the tide a little bit, or where you feel like you can't really support 100% everything that's going on, and it's just been a huge blessing for our family, for me and my wife personally. We are very glad that we made that move, and yeah, it has everything to do with the church. I just don't think there's anything that you could say, well, you know, I'm in a, you know, my church isn't so good and I don't feel spiritually so aware, but at least I have a good job. So, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, what's more important? And so I would encourage people. I think it's very hard in Germany. We're not very mobile. We don't like to move around, and I think that's something that I would encourage. You should move it to where it doesn't have to. I can, of course, I would love people to come to Gießen, but it doesn't have to be Gießen. But to move to a place where you can go to church and really get involved and be encouraged and feel like you found your place, it's absolutely worth it. Otherwise, I mean, I think, you know, just keep reading on. I think especially in Germany with the state churches, it makes pedobaptism a huge, very difficult thing to swallow, basically, because of all the hypocrisy and the formalism that are in the big churches where you know, they carry the name of Christ, but they believe all kinds of horrible things. And so I understand that's hard, but you know, my encouragement would be to press through to get to the biblical arguments and to really take the time, because I know it's especially on pedobaptism, but Reformed theology in general, I think it's worth the time you need to invest to understand how they understand the scriptures, how they understand the Bible, and to see the consistency that is there, especially when interpreting the Old Testament, I think, in light of the New. I think that's something that maybe is often neglected or overlooked in the German context. And I think it's absolutely worth it to invest the time to understand the hermeneutic and the Reformed theology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very foreign for somebody coming from a Baptist dispensational background. Mm-hmm. But to think through it, and I do think it's the way that the New Testament itself presents on how to understand the Old Testament.
Precisely.
Yeah, so that's maybe something, encouragement for people in Germany and that are thinking about making that switch or having difficulties. So it's worth it, and definitely invest the time. And then for how you can pray, I mean, I would start with just being thankful with for the developments that we've had. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have, I don't know if Jochen or Lucas talked about this, we have a Reform network that we're working on founding right now
in Germany of Reform churches. I think we spoke about it off air.
Okay.
but that's good.
Yeah, there's a Reform network. Yeah. So they're, for the longest time, the Berg churches were the only Reformed mm-hmm. and biblically sound churches mm-hmm. that there were in Germany. There are a lot of other good churches that aren't Reformed, but the ones that are Reformed in Germany are often, you know, the big churches that are not really Reformed, yeah, but Reformed right. in name only.
Yeah.
But there's been a development of churches that are getting support from Great Britain or other denominations from the States. The PCA has some missionary churches in Germany.
Yep.
There's just been a development of churches, Reformed churches in Germany that where we've have a the opportunity now we're working on founding a Reformed network of churches so we can work together and basically get the word out on Reformed theology in general. So that is something to be super thankful for. And you know, we're sitting there and I was like, maybe I think it's probably like 10 churches maybe, and altogether maybe 500, 600 congregants. Mm. So it's very small.
Yeah.
But I was talking to Jochen and Boris saying, but think about how it was, you know, like 10 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, it was like Jochen they were having church service in their parents' living room.
Yeah.
Three families and stuff. Yeah. And so our church is now, you know, like 70, 80 people, I think. Yeah. Altogether, so it's been massive, the growth that we've had and the exposure that the ART that Boris and Jochen's work have given to Reformed theology in general in Germany, and I think there's definitely more to come. I think it's a really exciting time for the church. So that's something that we can be really thankful for, and you can definitely pray for I think fidelity to God's word. Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to get off track and to get bogged down in difference of opinion on things that aren't so, that might not be so important, and it's so easy to get off mission and to not be faithful to God's word. I think that's something that we could definitely pray for, that the churches stay true to God's word, stay true to the confessions, and can just proclaim God's word and mm-hmm. Through the ART, through the churches. I really think the churches are absolutely where God's doing his work, and so you can pray that more people come and or, you know, want to listen to Reformed theology, people that come to our churches that maybe aren't all in yet, that they would, you know, go all the way into Reformed theology, and just generally that, you know, that people would grow, that are here in our churches, that they would grow in their understanding of the Bible and of the Lord, and for more people to come, and you know, people that are in other churches but you know, people that have never known God at all. That's where we are. We're in a very secular country, and I think that would be an amazing thing to see. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people coming that didn't grow up Christian, and so we've got a lot of work, and but you know, the Lord is good and he's strong, and he can use all of our efforts. So that's something you can pray for.
We'll certainly keep those things in prayer, and it's exciting to hear, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity I've had to speak with several people. It's wonderful to hear about your story and to get to know you there, and certainly I'll keep all the links and put everything into the episode description for people to follow up, but maybe some folks that are watching or listening to this will reach out, and hopefully someday more people will visit Giessen, but also the several other churches
right.
that are in the area and down the road. We pray that there'll be many, many more. I do want to not only thank you and all the brothers here at ART and in the Berg, but I want to thank all the listeners and viewers for watching. The information will be available, and I'll make sure that people can get connected. If anyone has any questions and wants to reach out, you can write into mail at reformforum.org. dispatch that. We'll get it to the right place if necessary. But I do certainly want to thank everybody for listening and for watching.